I'm Jeremy Barron, and this is Colts Narrow Chat, the only weekly English language podcast dedicated to Atletico Madrid and the official podcast of Into the Calderon, SB Nation's home for all things Atletico. On the pod this week, we return from international break with a bang. Managing Madrid's Kian Sobhany joins me for a discussion of all things derby. The Madrid derby is this Saturday at the Wanda Metropolitano, Atletico hosting Real Madrid. It's a particularly interesting iteration of the derby for a few reasons. Number one, despite being in the top four, one could argue that both teams are out of form. Second, Zinedine Zidane will be without one of his stars as Gareth Bale injured again over the break. He's out until 2018. And third, it's a chance for Atletico to make a major statement and possibly upend the league title race. We'll break down Real Madrid's inconsistencies, how Zidane will replace Bale for this game, predict our lineups, and predict the scoreline. It's going to be lit. Absolutely lit. We also make time to get into some transfer rumors, including the latest on Antoine Griezmann and others. Before we proceed into this edition of Colts Narrow Chat, I'd like to remind our listeners that you can subscribe and listen to Colts Narrow Chat on your favorite podcasting platform, including iTunes. Please leave a rating and review on iTunes, guys. We'd really, really appreciate it. Helps get more eyes and ears on the program. Also, you will hear me make reference to a Monday podcast. I joined Kian on his podcast, Churros y Tácticas, over at Managing Madrid, a general Spanish football podcast. We talked about the Madrid derby over there as well. So check out Churros y Tácticas on Managing Madrid's website or on iTunes. And finally, head over to our Patreon page, patreon.com/ColtsNarrowChat. The reward and reward tiers will be getting an update over the next week or two. So feel free to make any suggestions as to what you want to see when you become a patron, patreon.com/ColtsNarrowChat. We'll be back with Kian Sobhany after this. On Colts Narrow Chat once.
Yeah.
That's really weird.
Last season, I think it was.
It was last season's derby.
Yeah.
It was really weird. I could have sworn I had you on more times.
I think we've done a lot of podcasts together, but on Colts Narrow, I think I've only been on once, yeah.
Yeah, this is your second appearance. That's very strange. But whatever the case, I'm glad you're here.
Likewise.
So we can talk about the Madrid derby, a fixture that has offered some joy for Atletico fans, but mostly just intense psychological trauma over the past few years. Real Madrid, interesting start to the season for them. When I was on your podcast on Monday, we talked about, I termed their start to the season as fine. You called that overly positive. I still think it has been fine, but what have been some of the issues in your head? Why are Madridistas so mad this time?
Well, the perspective of fine is just something I just don't hear much, because yeah. I'm in Real Madrid circles constantly, and when you're in that atmosphere, unless you're speaking to like some like-minded journalists, all you hear is doom and gloom. And this is not even unique to a crisis. It happens in a victory, in a convincing victory. People will pull out the negatives, and that's just kind of human nature. Like, we pull out the negatives and we remember that. It's like the equivalent of, you remember one negative comment over thousands of positive things, right?
Right.
But obviously when Real Madrid is not playing well and there's like a mini crisis, it just gets magnified. What was the question you were asking me? What's happening? What's going wrong?
Yeah, basically, what's been going on? I mean, Ronaldo's not scoring. Benzema's not scoring. Why can't they score a goal?
Right now, there's something going on in Spain, and through some kind of supernatural force, we've lost the powers of Griezmann, we've lost the powers of Suarez, we've lost the powers of Benzema, and Ronaldo has been not himself. But, you know, to be fair to Ronaldo, I think he's having actually a better season than people give him credit for. I think his issue is he's just not scoring as prolifically. When you look at him play, the eye test is actually really good. And something with Ronaldo, I've always said, I get worried about him the moment he starts not being involved in the play. But if he's not scoring, but he's active, he's dropping deep to get touches, he's assisting, he's creating a lot of chances and just getting unlucky, I'm not worried about him. I think eventually he'll come. This is the same thing we talk ourselves into with Ronaldo every single season. We say, you know, he's past it. At some point, Real Madrid have to cash in. And then the springtime rolls around and he just goes to another level and he just transforms into a unicorn.
Yeah.
I think what you can say is that every year his mid-season slump gets a bit prolonged and a bit worse, but then his emergence in the spring gets better every season, which is kind of weird. I don't know. I just feel inadequate in many ways to to make a diagnosis on Ronaldo, because I've been proven wrong so many times with him, and that's just he's made a whole career of just proving people wrong, quite frankly. So I don't know what comes of it, but the problem is, like, yeah, obviously right now he's not at his best, even if he's been okay without the goals. Benzema just hasn't been good. Just straight up hasn't been good. Gareth Bale has actually been really good.
When he's played.
And obviously that's another issue, is that we don't have Gareth Bale, and we just can't count on him at this point. You know, I think we mentioned this a bit on Monday's podcast we recorded on Churros y Tacticas, but Casemiro has resurfaced some of his bad habits from early last season. Modric has had a couple really brilliant games. The one that stands out is the one against Tottenham at home, where he was to me the best player on the entire pitch, and he put Eriksen in his pocket multiple times, and he was just fantastic defensively, offensively, ball control, passing lanes, just great. But he has had many games this season where not only has he not been that, he just hasn't been good. Toni Kroos looks a bit, I don't know what the right word to describe Kroos is, because when Kroos isn't having a good game, it just affects everyone. And sometimes you just don't notice it. There are games you'll watch Kroos play and you don't really know what he does, but then if you just watch him play, like in an aerial view, just track him, he does so many things. And he hasn't been doing that consistently. He's had a lot of misplaced passes that have just been unforced, like no one around him. His crossfield switches haven't been great. His vertical passing hasn't been as incisive. You know, he peaked in the Super Cup, but in that sense, we haven't really seen that Kroos yet. There's been a lot of good to take out of this team in this season. There's been a lot of bad. And I actually wrote an article about this just last week, I think it was, highlighting all of the defensive gambles that Real Madrid have taken, most notably against Tottenham away, where the press hasn't been cohesive. One player goes forward, the rest don't rotate. The defense falls apart. That's happened a lot. Giveaways in their own third, inability to deal with an opposing press, just not missing chances, not scoring chances is a huge one. That's it, man. Yeah. I feel like at some point it'll come, but
yeah, you got to think so, especially after last season when we saw a Real Madrid that didn't always dominate, that didn't always just absolutely throttle the opposition, but still won just about every game it played. And I have to think we're going to see that again. In this fixture last year, I think we were talking about Ronaldo in a similar sense. He got off to kind of a slow start, and then he lit up the Calderon with a hat trick, and they won 3-0.
Yeah.
So,
well, the thing we had in that game was, well, we won 3-0 in the Calderon that game. We had Bale that game. Who was phenomenal.
Yeah.
We had Isco. We will have Isco now, but Isco was just phenomenal that night. And then we also had Mateo Kovacic, who to me was one of the standouts of that game. And, you know, you talk about fighting fire with fire. Kovacic is someone you go to war with, like in the Calderon.
Yeah.
In a stadium like that, he was unbelievable too. He won't be there on the weekend. I'm not sure he'd play anyway, but you know, to your point, like, well, we did see that version of Real Madrid where they just couldn't do no wrong. But last season at this time, there were a lot of question marks. We were struggling in the Champions League. We came second in our group. It got actually pretty bad, like, around, you know, closer to the Christmas time. I don't know if it was December, January. We lost to Valencia at the Mestalla. A lot of things went wrong that game. We had chaotic performances against Las Palmas. And the eye test really wasn't good for a long time. And you remember the last-minute goals, the ones from Ramos. There were so many.
So many.
And those have faded. Like, those just haven't been there this season to save us, you know, through the slump.
A little bit of regression there, which is always good to see from Ramos. But you mentioned Kovacic earlier, and he's an interesting case. He has been deemed fully fit, but he's not going to play?
The reality is that when Zidane has his full midfield available, Kovacic is not a starter. You know, this is a very debatable thing, and it's a very polarizing subject in Real Madrid circles, but I think a lot of people feel that the team can do without Casemiro. And that doesn't necessarily mean bringing in Marcos Llorente, too, who I really highly, but that the team can get away with out of defense, pure defensive midfielder, and packing the midfield like it did in the Calderon last season. And that's essentially what Kovacic was there for, because Cruz wasn't there. Cruz and Casemiro were both injured that game, so Kovacic by default had to play. And it was Kovacic, Modric, and then a packed midfield with Bale, Lucas Vazquez, and Isco. But the reality is that Kovacic won't play a do-or-die game against a big opponent when the full team is available. It'll be Cruz, Casemiro, and Modric, essentially.
And mostly the full team is available here with one big exception, which we'll get to. But I thought with Isco possibly being out, although he's been confirmed now, I thought it would have been a really good chance for Kovacic this weekend. I thought he could have stepped in pretty much in the same place as Isco, because Kovacic can play really anywhere across the midfield, because his skill set is just so varied. But it's an interesting one with Mateo. There's been an argument this season that Real Madrid's bench is too young, too inexperienced, that after Pepe's departure, James going to Bayern, Morata going to Chelsea, that this is just too inexperienced. Not enough big game experience. There's a lot of talent, but it's just too young. What do you make of that argument? Is there any credibility to it, I suppose?
The argument itself is not wrong, but the where it breaks down for me is that everyone thinks that it was possible to retain Morata and James when it wasn't. If you ask any Real Madrid player in the summer, or sorry, any Real Madrid fan in the summertime, if they had to lose one of Asensio, James, and Isco, everyone would have said James. Asensio, you just don't give up under any circumstances, and Isco was a fan favorite. And I just don't see where James would have fit there. I mean, I could make it work in my head, but I know Zidane looked at that as kind of a superfluous piece to the whole, you know, this, we're talking about James, a guy who watched the Champions League final in a suit in the stands. Morata didn't even play the Champions League final. What Morata and James did is they basically were able to provide rest without drop-off to the starters for the big games. And then they themselves didn't even feature in the big games. So you look at the way Real Madrid has been losing, and it's the starters that haven't been performing. So I think the depth thing is overblown. I would also say that Morata was a huge loss, and you just couldn't have kept him unless you would have had decided to sell Benzema too, which then you're going into a whole other wormhole of Ronaldo wants to play with Benzema, Zidane loves Benzema. If it were me and I had to choose, I would have picked Morata every day, and that's mostly because of youth and upside. And that's not a knock on Karim to me, but I also think that, you know, a lot of fans cry over James, and I love James. I think, and you know, people also forget that technically James is still a Real Madrid player. It's not inconceivable he comes back, although the ball is in Bayern's court.
Right.
I think what basically replaces James in many ways is Ceballos. And you and I have been tracking Ceballos since last season. We both know how great he is. He was on another level with the under-21 team over the summer, and then yesterday. He was on another level too.
Scored a hat trick. Jeez.
He scored a hat trick. He's very decisive. And I've mentioned this on the Managing Madrid podcast, where players like Isco and Asensio are a bit slower with the ball in terms of, like, they like to kind of glide and suck in defenders and release a pass and wait for the perfect moment. James is like the polar opposite style, where he knows where the ball is going before it gets to him. He's zipping the ball around quickly, and he's very decisive and direct in the final third. And I think Ceballos, to me, is a good mix of both worlds, where he can hold possession like an Isco, but he can put through some unbelievable through balls that no one else in the stadium can see, which James was very good at in the final third. And I mentioned this to you on Monday. Zidane has had a fascination with Lucas Vazquez.
Yeah.
I don't see why Ceballos can't be the guy up the bench instead. And I understand that they're not like-for-like positionally, but Ceballos is versatile enough that he can help on the wing if needed, and he won't act as a traditional winger, but what he will do is provide support in the midfield, both defensively, and he'll help a lot offensively too, because to me that's a more pragmatic way to score than to just switch it to Lucas for endless crosses.
Yeah, it's like crossing on a loop for like 25 minutes. It's just what that's all he's out there for. Yeah, the fascination.
Real have the most crosses per game in Europe. I don't know if you knew that.
I did not know that. Interesting.
Yeah. I think it's like 27, 28 or something.
Well, that's great. That's great news for an Atletico defense that can't defend headers anymore.
This is true.
That's awesome.
I never thought about that.
Yeah, great. Yeah, with Godin and Savic in the middle, that's going to be great. It's going
to
be.
Why is it? That's weird to me because Godin. Do you feel like Godin has been himself this year?
No, he hasn't. He's lost a step. It's just to be expected. He's played so many minutes over the last few years. He's going to be 32 in a couple months. But I think a little bit of it as well is that he keeps playing next to Savic. He's not playing next to someone with more pace, with more dynamism, like Jimenez or Lucas. And Simeone keeps pairing him with Savic.
Hmm.
So I do think Godin has lost a step this season, but that's to be expected. I mean, he doesn't have very many years left as a top drawer center back. Probably another year. Maybe a year and a half.
One of the things that Robbie said to me in the Q&A today for Managing Madrid was I asked him about his opinion on the recycle thing. And he really felt that Juanfran is an issue, like you did too.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, Juanfran has been a corpse. I just don't think he's been good this season. I don't know what's wrong with him, but he just looks lifeless and dead.
Yeah. Harsh words. But yeah, it's kind of... We've kind of had the same reaction. I think I rate Versalico a little higher than Robbie does. I think Versalico is very good, and he deserves a chance, especially when you're playing Juanfran in this state. But it's Juanfran's old, too. He's 32 going on 33, and he hasn't been the same since the San Siro final. Regardless of whether or not there is a mental block emanating from that game, I think he's gotten old. And talking about guys who played a lot of football, he played 4,000 minutes, I think, four straight seasons without a real deputy. I mean, Jesus Gomez was his deputy for, like, two seasons. And Jesus Gomez is now playing at Newcastle, not even starting at Newcastle. So there was a lack of a quality backup, which meant Juanfran had to play every game. He's still playing every game, even though he can't defend really high-class opposition anymore.
Do you think he makes the World Cup squad?
Juanfran? No.
Yeah, okay.
Nah. Lopetegui doesn't like him. I don't think Lopetegui's even called him up since he got appointed.
No, I guess not.
No.
I was revisiting this Spanish depth chart I made in the summertime.
Mm.
I know already I had made so many changes in my head. Like, if you, like, go down the pecking order, so many, there's, like, I think so many right backs have already surpassed Juanfran.
So many.
Yeah.
And Odriozola is the latest one.
Yeah.
You know, just yeah.
I also wonder. Like, I don't think it'll be long. Maffeo does either.
Nope, not the way he's
maybe
playing.
A couple years.
Maybe, yeah, about a year, year and a half.
Yeah.
Yeah, Maffeo has just been superb, as you know. The way he just hunted down Cristiano.
On our left flank.
Yes, he did. Yeah, he's awesome. But the biggest story about this game, I think the largest looming figure has got to be Gareth Bale. And he's out again. He's out till 2018 with another injury. Keanu, at this point, even I have to feel bad for the guy. It's just nightmare after nightmare injury for him. And how badly is he going to be missed in this game?
Depends on who you ask. In my opinion, I think he's going to be really missed. A lot of people, there's like a different... This is another polarizing thing among Real Madrid fans. There's a group of people who think that Bale is just great, fantastic, phenomenal when healthy, and I'm in that camp. There's another group that think he's just a liability and Real Madrid are better off without him, and I don't see that. I think the track record with Bale is when he's on the field, 90% of the time he's conducive to Real Madrid scoring and being dangerous and providing a different dimension in attack. His issue is obviously health, but it's not just health. So the cycle is essentially when he comes back from injury, it takes him a while to get back into his rhythm. So if you go back, the most recent example is he basically didn't play at all towards the tail end of last season. And then he spent the summer recovering. He came back and he was fine, like in leading up to the season and also just in the early stages of the season. I think he was good. And then when he finally got into his rhythm, he was great against Sociedad away at Anoeta. Against Levante, he was really good, despite not being able to score. I can't remember if it was Levante. Maybe I'm mistaken. Maybe it's Valencia that I meant to say. And then he was probably the team's best player also in Dortmund, and he scored that great goal. So he's good when he plays. The problem is it takes time for him to recover. He plays great, and as soon as he gets into his rhythm, that's it. He's gone. And then the way it always happens is he leaves the pitch with something as a precaution. Everyone in the post-game presser is like, oh, it's just a precaution. You know, he's fine. We just wanted to make sure. And then he doesn't appear in the next game and like, oh, yeah, he's injured. And then that injury turns into a one-month injury. And then you don't hear updates from him. And then 1 month later, I said, no, actually, it's 2 months. I had that exact fear when he came off Dortmund, and that's exactly what happened.
Yeah, because everyone said when he came off against Dortmund, it was just a precaution. He'll be fine. And he hasn't played since.
Yeah. That's the cycle in a nutshell. And then this will rinse and repeat.
Yep.
So I don't know if there's anyone who supports Bale more than I do. I really don't. I don't think you can keep a player that doesn't play, because health is an underrated thing. Like, it's very similar to like when you go on FIFA and like you look at a player's, I don't know, ratings, shooting, pace, dribbling, whatever. I don't know what else there is, but if you were to make a column for health, Bale's would be very low, obviously. And I think people need to look at that also when they evaluate a player. Like, health, it's maybe unfair to say it's a skill, but I mean, greatness, great players have to be healthy, you know, otherwise you're not in that conversation, and that's the truth.
Yeah, I can't remember who made this point, but if you want to be like a truly great, like world-class player, you can't be playing 25 games a season. You could be great in those 25 games, but you can't be playing 25 games a year. You need to be playing 50.
I mean, it's the exact same reason why Joel Embiid is so polarizing too in the NBA. It's like, why is he getting paid that much? Because he barely plays. But then you look at him play, he's like, oh my God, he's
unbelievable.
It's because
of what he can do. Even though he only played 30 games last year, it's because of what he can do. And it's the same with Bale. Yeah, Bale's health in FIFA has got to be like a 40, you know?
That's like generous.
Like a 35. But
I mean, but the thing is, like, you do feel bad for him because obviously he wants to play. It's like, it's not his choice to be injured. And I don't know the sports science behind this, but I always ask myself, so why is it that a great player like Ronaldo just doesn't get injured? A great player like Messi just doesn't get injured? Like, we've seen injuries to them before, but nothing on this scale, and it's never like you can always like just count on them. Is it? And I just don't know the science behind it. If it's behind, I don't know, regime. If it's your diet, your exercise, your muscle mass, your genetics. I don't know. I really don't. But I do know that these are professional footballers and they get to pay the best trainers and sports scientists on the planet. So I don't understand.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think either of us know enough to say, well, he's not doing this right, or he's doing this incorrectly, or he doesn't have proper form when he's doing this. You know, it's just one of those things. And some hamstrings are, you know, made of glass, you know.
Yeah. I saw someone comment the other day, it's his muscle mass. Like, I don't.
What?
It's such a naive comment.
It's muscle mass.
If it had to do with muscle mass, then pretty much every athlete in the world would be constantly in the hospital.
Madridistas are special, Keon, as you know as well as anyone.
Unfortunately.
So, question from @JezzaPenguin. It was about Atletico, but we'll also talk about the Real Madrid 11. Which 4 to 5 central midfielders will start in the derby for Atleti? You have to figure Gabby will somehow start over Tomas, and both of them are probably going to start. But Keon, I'll start with you. What's Zidane's team going to look like?
I think it's pretty straightforward because we just know Zidane by now. We know his pecking order. So it'll just be Benzema, Ronaldo, Isco, and then Cruz, Casemiro, Modric. The one question I have is right back, because Carvajal is not playing and he's obviously a huge loss, but Zidane's in the past he's opted to go with Ashraf, I don't think Ashraf is ready for a game like this. I don't think he was ready against Tottenham. And I've written about this in the past. I think Ashraf is going to be a really good player. I watched him with Castilla a lot last season. I don't see what the rush was with him. I don't understand it. I don't know why he's not getting a stepping stone the way Llorente and Vallejo did. It would have been better to go that route and just keep Danilo for another season. But with... And by the way, I think he's actually been quite good defensively, and which is interesting because he's known for his pace and offense. But I think defensively, his IQ is actually really good. So I think that part he's been okay with. But he just has no confidence beating his man or crossing right now. So I hope that Zidane makes the choice of putting Nacho at right back. And then just putting essentially Varane and Ramos and Marcelo. And then you have Kiko Casilla in goal because Keylor Navas is not playing. So,
yeah, that's going to be a theme for Keylor if Kepa is indeed coming.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You might want to get used to that, injured or not.
That'll be interesting.
Mm-hmm. But, yeah, that seems about right to me. For Atletico, I can pretty much reel them off. Oblak, Juanfran, Godin, Savic, Felipe at the back. Probably Gabby and Tomas with Saul and Correa on the wings, and then Griezmann, and I'll go with Gamero up top, or it could be Griezmann and Correa up top because Koke is fit, so Koke might actually start. So it could be Saul, Tomas, Koke, and Gabby with Griezmann and
Correa. We might have Koke back? Wow.
Yep, Koke is training. Carrasco is training. Simeone has everyone available.
If, from a Madridista point of view, I hope you put Gamero and not Correa, because Correa terrifies me more.
Yeah, Gamero will miss, guaranteed to miss a big chance.
If you were to change anything, if you were the coach, would you change anything?
Yeah,
I would. Just put Correa there, would you, and then you put Recycle?
Well, I wouldn't be playing four central midfielders if I were the coach. Yeah, I would probably go 4-3-3 for this game. I would go three at the back. I mean, that's what Atleti should be doing. Because they have three really capable center backs. Four, depending on how you rate Savage. But really, ideally, I would love to see Atletico play three at the back more. Simeone just won't do it.
If it were up to me, I would like to see Benzema come off the bench in this game.
Hmm.
And I put Ronaldo up top, and I would put Asensio. So I'd go Isco, Asensio, Ronaldo, Modric, and I would like to see Modric, Kroos, and Kovacic together more than I would like to see Modric, Kroos, and Casemiro. And I would hope to see Dani Ceballos play in the second half.
Oh, of course. I think the big moment for Ceballos here. I do think he's going to play Saturday. And I think
just assume so, given his form.
Yeah.
I don't know what's
in it. Yeah, I tweeted this yesterday. I hope Zidane wasn't watching, because then he might be tempted to play him.
I mean, but that's the thing. Like, I don't know. I don't think form is a thing for Zidane. I don't think that exists in this world.
Yeah, not really. No, he usually has a pretty good idea, regardless of form, who he wants out there.
Yeah.
Yeah, that noticing his patterns and how they've kind of evolved over the past couple seasons. But yeah, if I were in charge of Atleti for this game, I mean, I would probably go 3-4-3, 3-5-2. I mean, Griezmann and Correa have got to be the forwards, whatever the case, because they're Atletico's two best forwards. And Griezmann obviously is not in form. Correa has been kind of patchy of late, but they're the best Simeone's got. So I'm almost certain the bolt start. But yeah, Koke is going to be back for this game, which is a big relief. As we talked about Monday, Atletico really missed him. They've missed someone to assume control over the ball in the center of the park, or rather on the right-hand side, which is where he usually plays, to just take control, spray out passes, kind of drift toward the middle on counterattacks, and kind of lead the way. Atleti have missed that, and it's kind of underrated because sometimes Koke can go a little invisible because he tries to do everything, but then he's been out for six games. Atleti have won twice.
Yeah, no, he's been really good.
So you notice him.
Well, because to me, I had some criticisms of him last year.
Yeah.
But the more everything I saw from him this season before I got injured, I was really impressed with. I was like, I actually was happy for him because I thought, oh, this Koke's alive. To me, last season, he just wasn't he was just kind of like an overhyped player to me. A bit harsh maybe, but he wasn't passing well. He didn't really understand where he was supposed to be. He just didn't look like the player that was hyped up earlier in his career when he was younger. This season, I watched him and I thought he looked really good. I thought this is the Koke that we were supposed to get.
Yeah, and it's the Koke Atleti need, and he's probably going to be the most important player Saturday. We'll see just how different Atleti look with him out there compared to with him out, because with him out there, there just was nothing in attack, just no ideas, no one to really spray the ball out, no one to make that incisive decision, that final ball, no one really to do that. So we'll see just how much his return. How big his return is going to be. Carrasco will probably be on the bench. I would expect him to come on in the second half and just offer some more width, explosiveness. Carrasco is, this is probably, in the bigger games, it's probably better for him to come off the bench. I know he doesn't want to, but, sucks for him. Because, you put him on in the, 55th minute, 60th minute, he will just burn teams. It's kind of the role Correa had been in the past couple of years, but now Correa's kind of an undisputed starter.
He should be.
Yeah.
He should be. I was happy. I don't know, who was it that someone... You had an injury recently, and then they came back, and Correa kept his place, and I was happy for him about that. I can't remember who it was now. This would have been like a month ago. Right. But anyways, I hope that even with people coming back, and even with Vitolo coming, to Atleti, I think Correa should still be a starter.
Yeah, we're about 6 weeks from that happening. Costa and Vitolo in about 6 weeks' time. Yeah. It's kind of exciting. Yeah, again, I don't really know where Vitolo is going to fit here unless Simeone overhauls the system, which I don't think he's going to. But we know where Costa fits, obviously. It's going to be quite interesting to see how Simeone works in these two guys who he's wanted for years.
Yeah.
But, that's in 6 weeks' time, and we have this derby coming up this weekend, and it's a big statement game. Most of the statements thus far from Atleti this season have kind of been bad ones. It's time to make a good statement. A victory here kind of puts La Liga on its head. It kind of turns everything upside down. It makes Barca, I think, the clear favorites to win the league. But if Madrid win, we're back to even. Just about.
If there's no question that... Well, it's a must-win game for both teams. For Real Madrid, if they lose this, I just don't know how they come back.
Yeah, it's going to be very tough for them. You have 3 losses through 12 weeks. It's going to be very, very difficult.
This is a must-win game for us, obviously, and then it kind of eases off a little bit. Barcelona have Valencia coming up in November, too. I also think that they're going to have a hard time away to Leganés this weekend.
I could see it. Leganés have been hit for goals the last couple weeks.
But they're defensively, they're good. And Butarque has been a tough place to play.
Yeah. It's a smaller stadium. Leganés play really well there. Yeah. It could be a challenge. And if they drop points there and Real Madrid take all 3 at the Metropolitano, then, game on. I think if Real Madrid are within 2 points ahead of the Clásico, they're going to win the league. And then they win the Clásico, they're going to win the league.
Well, I don't think Barcelona has to drop points to Leganés, but it's very possible they drop points against Valencia. So
definitely, yes.
To me, if you're Real Madrid and you're trying to convince yourself of winning the league, you have to look at the Clásico, both of them this year, and just say that's 6 points right there because we're winning both. That's the mind frame you have to go with. And then that's 2 points. And then you just hope that 2 points are picked up and dropped elsewhere, right?
Yep.
In my head, I already know, unfortunately, how the Valencia thing is going to play out. They're going to get dominated by Valencia and then have a penalty in the 98th minute or something. That's exactly how the script is going to be written.
Yeah, we'll see if that comes true. You're a betting man?
No, never. But I've definitely played bets in my head that I would have won a lot of money on.
And this is going to be one of them. Yeah. All right, man. You got a scoreline prediction? Any different from Monday?
This is a Colchonero podcast. I got to be careful.
Yeah. Choose your next few words carefully, Keon.
I'm going to say 3-1 victory for Real Madrid.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
Well, so ends Keon Sobani's appearance. I'm
second and last appearance ever.
I'm sticking with 1-1. I think it's reasonable. I think Atleti are going to play really well, probably. They're going to get up for this game, but just the inability to do really anything of note in the final third and the inability to defend crosses and set pieces, which Real Madrid are really good on, I think that's probably going to come back to hurt them. So I'll go with 1-1, which wouldn't be a terrible result, in all honesty.
But you also made the point on Monday that Atleti got up for big games in the past, most notably the Barcelona game.
Yeah.
It just wasn't sustainable for 90 minutes, and I think it was. It's not because it was physically unsustainable. It was mentally unsustainable. It seemed.
Yeah, just sitting as deep as they sat against Barca, they played really well for 60 minutes, and then they just, you know, burrowed into the 18-yard box, and Barcelona scored.
Against they started the game flying, and they were pressing high. They were
excellent.
Kind of just attacking in waves, and then as soon as they stopped doing, like, if they do that against Real Madrid, I think Real Madrid are in big trouble, especially the way their incapability of coming out of a press this season. You give Real Madrid the ball, I'm less scared, not because Atleti isn't a good defensive team, they're obviously great even now, but because their counterattacks just haven't been scary.
Right.
It's just their counterattacks have been slow and lethargic and tame.
Yeah, I do think Atleti are going to start off really fast. I think they're going to try to get an early goal, get the Wanda Metropolitano roaring. If they get an early goal, then, I mean, hopefully, I always hope that they will just continue to push for a second, even though I know they're going to sit deep and defend a 1-0 lead.
I don't understand, like, it's their sample size to say Atletico should not play that way. Like,
but they do!
Even the Champions League semifinal, the game in the Calderon.
Yep, went up 2-0.
That was the exact same circumstance where I thought they were just on fire to start the game. The stadium was raucous. It was frenzied. I think they scored two goals. Was it two goals they scored?
It was 2-0 inside 16 minutes.
And then from there, that's it. They pulled back. They retreated, and then Real Madrid grew into the game, and it was over. That was it.
Yeah, and then Benzema created that goal, and then, yeah, that was nothing more that can be done.
Yeah.
I think the final 30 minutes are going to be the most decisive minutes of the game. The final 25-30 minutes, and then we're really going to see if Atleti still have the energy, they still have the mentality to finish this off if they have a lead or get a late goal. I mean, who knows how it's going to go? And I have a general idea of how it's going to go, but we'll see.
I think that sounds about right.
Yeah, let's talk about some transfer rumors, and then we'll get on out of here. It is Derby week, so we have to kind of separate fact from fiction, or, you know, fiction from even worse fiction. From at @Anthony_Mears, is there any credibility to the transfer rumors of Versalco out, Herrera, Ozil, or Dries Mertens in? And if so, what is your take on these rumors? Oh, boy. Versalco, it very much right now, it very much looks like he's going to be leaving, and it might happen in January. Simeone doesn't really rate him. He hasn't really given him much of a chance. Juan Ferran is still preferred in big games, as we've discussed. There was a report out yesterday that he's agreed a deal with Napoli, a 5-year deal with Napoli, and he could move in January.
What was it, 20 million or something?
Thereabouts, yep.
Yeah. I mean, it's a big loss. It's not like Versalco isn't completely replaceable, but I kind of understand the frustration of, it's the reason that he's leaving is because the lack of trust when he's been good, and when Juan Fran is just playing at this, you know, on this level, it's not adding up.
Yeah. Griezmann, of course, again back in the rumor mill. This time, reports have said in France and in Spain that he's going to be going to Barcelona next season. I spoke with a Barca source this morning who said basically nothing's been done. Barcelona are interested. Griezmann wants to leave, but there's been no contract offer. There's been no real substantive talks. So for now, it's just more, you know, more of the same chatter with Griezmann.
I still think if he leaves, it's a Premier League move somewhere.
I think so too. but
he just looks mentally checked out, which is weird because none of this makes sense to me. None of it does, because we were talking about it last season where if he stays, it's because of Simeone, and now it just doesn't seem like even that is motivating him.
Yeah, now Griezmann, his brand, his personal brand, and his ambitions he's become bigger than the club. That's kind of where we're at right now.
That's what it feels like.
The drive isn't there, and Griezmann is more focused on building himself up as a superstar and building his international brand. It seems he is more into doing that than playing football, which is, you know, really bad news for Atletico, who rely on him quite a lot.
Yeah.
Ander Herrera. This would be a good one. Perhaps available on a free next summer from Manchester United. I don't really see any harm in this. I think Herrera, I've rated him since his days at Athletic. I think he's pretty good. And on a free, you know, what can go wrong?
I think actually, I don't know if there's any rumors about him, but I think Herrera would be a very seamless fit with Atletico. His playing style would fit nicely, I think. I think if you had a midfield of, again, it's like 4-3-3, that doesn't really, I don't know how much it exists in Simeone's world, but a midfield trio of Saul, Koke, and Herrera would actually be very difficult to play against.
Yes. Yeah, I really like Herrera. And yeah, I actually kind of hope this happens. He'd be a very nice pickup. Ozil is not happening. It's just not, considering his past at Real Madrid, considering his wages. It's just, there are, and his age, there's a host of reasons why it's not going to happen, even though it's not a free. I
can't picture it at all.
No.
Can't picture him in an athletic uniform.
No,
Herrera, I can picture, not Ozil.
Yeah, I can't either. Finally, Dries Mertens. Oh God, I would be so excited if this move happened. I don't think it will. But oh man, Mertens, Correa, Costa, potential forward line. Oh man, pinch me, just hook it up to my veins right now. Give me an IV.
Hey man, it's not like Atletico aren't going to be spending money. I think they will be.
Oh yeah. I mean, yeah. I mentioned this a couple weeks ago on this program. Atleti are potentially looking at bringing in 300 million euros next summer from player sales. Because you're looking at Griezmann leaving for 100 million. Oblak is probably leaving, and his buyout's 100 million. Gamero, Gaetan, Vieto, possibly Carrasco all going. That's potentially 80, 90 million right there between those four players.
Yeah.
I mean, some of this money is going to go back into paying for the stadium that Atleti have moved into, but a lot of the other resources are going to go toward, you know, building a new team, and that is exciting. Even though that's still, you know, a ways away, it's exciting. All right, so we'll leave it here then. That was Kian Sobani. You can follow him on Twitter at KianSo. You can follow me on Twitter at JB Barron. You can follow Into the Calderon at Into the Calderon. And like ITC on Facebook at facebook.com/IntoTheCalderon. Colt Gennaro Chat is available on your favorite podcasting platform. That includes iTunes. Please leave a rating and review if you are subscribing on iTunes. It really helps visibility, gets more eyes and ears on the podcast. Also, if you're interested in contributing to the show as a patron, interested in supporting the show, head over to patreon.com/Colt Gennaro Chat. I will be reviewing specific rewards doled out to patrons in the next week or so. So be on the lookout for some fresh new goodies if you decide to become a patron. Patreon.com/ColtGennaroChat. We will be back next week. I will be joining you, Kian, next week, along with hopefully Robbie, to recap this game. We'll also have a fresh Colt Gennaro Chat. Until then, adios.